Last hour on Air Talk, we looked at the future of the Republican Party post-President Trump. We now turn our attention to the Democratic Party, where you've got a more moderate president in Joe Biden. His vice president-elect with a highly progressive voting record in the U.S. Senate. And, of course, you've got progressive leaders in the party, like Bernie Sanders, for example, and Elizabeth Warren. The question is, how is the Biden administration going to be dealing with the moderate as well as progressive wings of the party, and how does that all factor into the party's future? Joining us is Democratic strategist and founder and CEO of Rodriguez Strategies, former senior Obama advisor in 2008, Matt Rodriguez. Matt, so good to have you with us again.
Morning, Larry.
So, how do you think President-elect Biden is going to deal with the progressive wing of his party?
Well, I think it's a different question now than it was pre-election. I think pre-election, there was a lot of cheerleading and a lot of press around what a large Democratic victory that this was going to be, not just for him, but obviously at all levels of government. That really didn't turn out to be the case. So I think there's going to be a lot. We can talk about this, and there's a lot of rhetoric around what the progressive wing is going to do. Frankly, I think they lost a significant amount of leverage simply because Biden's just not going to have that much room to operate. We'll see what happens in the runoff seats in Georgia in a few months. But the fact is, it's most likely that the Senate's going to remain in Republican control. That will give Mitch McConnell essentially veto power over anything that moves. The House is a little bit more narrowly Democratic than it was. So I think there'll be plenty of progressive ideas, but the bottom line is none of that is going to get put into any type of legislative action. It's not going to get passed and go to his desk. So I think Biden has to make a decision is how much do I want to cut deals and how much do I want to get done and show the American people that I can sort of move this legislative process along? That's one decision. Or how much do I kind of want to battle it out and try to show Republicans that they're intransigent and will that work for me politically? And I think that's a decision he's going to have to make. My guess is he's going to look more on the deal making side simply because not getting anything done could hurt him in the 2022 off year elections. But it's a decision he's going to have to make. But I don't think the left has a lot of leverage here, because they didn't pick up a large amount of seats. So there does not seem to be a mandate for that movement. And I think it would be a risk for Biden to go in that direction.
What about with his cabinet choices? Do you think it's going to be necessary for him to have some high profile progressives in those cabinet positions?
Yeah, I think he'll need to do that. I mean, I think you're going to have a little bit of both. I think he's probably going to give a couple of progressive folks, you know, Tom Steyer's trying to get something. Elizabeth Warren's looking at things. Bernie Sanders has made some rumblings. I think he's going to do the same thing, frankly, on the Republican side. I think he's going to try to name one or two Republicans, similar to what Bill Clinton did with, say, Bill Cohen, who was defense secretary back in the Clinton administration. So I think Biden is going to try to have a more ecumenical, if that's the word, cabinet to try to show the American people that he's trying to have a bit of a broader coalition than Trump, who is such a hardcore and divisive figure. So I think he is going to give some to the progressives. I think he's going to give some to Republicans. And I think he's going to try to craft a fairly wide ideological swath in terms of his cabinet and other senior positions.
We're talking with Matt Rodriguez, Democratic strategist. Also with us, Jennifer Fernandez Ancona, who is co-founder and vice president of Way to Win, a national donor and organizer network for progressive causes. Ms. Ancona, thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate it. What are your thoughts about the degree of influence progressives in the party will have on this administration?
Yeah, thank you so much, Larry. You know, the way we see it is that it was a multiracial and cross-class majority that has delivered this election to Biden. And turning them out to vote and to be engaged has been the work of years, not weeks, with community organizations, you know, Latino organizations, Movement for Black Lives organizations, union members, youth organizers. They all came together to knock millions of doors, make tens of millions of phone calls and texts, and they got out the vote, and we won. We delivered this multiracial majority, delivered the election to Biden. defeating a would-be autocrat who essentially has his own television network is no small feat. And we also flipped two Republican strongholds in the South and Southwest, looking at Arizona and Georgia, which we know all the votes aren't counted, but we know that we are going to flip Arizona, and we are very close to flipping Georgia, if not already having flipped it. That's huge, and it really points to where we need to go in the party, which is listening to what this multiracial majority wants, and not only listening to them, but actually delivering for them. So I don't see it the same way as, you know, progressive or left versus not. I think the facts on the ground are that this majority, which is made up of a wide, diverse range of people and cares about racial justice, cares about economic justice, and cares about climate justice, that those are the policies that we need to deliver on. And look, we would love to have more power in the Senate and in the House, but this presidential election sucked the air out of everything because it was so existential. So we got what we got, what we needed to get, which was to defeat Trump. There's a lot that Biden can do with appointments, whether or not they even get confirmed. He can appoint acting folks to actually run the government, and there's over 200 policies that he can pass via executive order. So that's what we need to lean into. If McConnell is going to block us, we need to come together as a diverse coalition to pass policies that will improve people's lives.
So, Matt, let me ask, because she brings up an excellent point about executive orders by the president. Do you think that that's something that Joe Biden is going to seriously consider and issuing those in a progressive way?
It's a great point. I think there's going to be a real dance here between McConnell and Biden. And McConnell needs to make a decision. Is he going to do something similar to what he did with Obama, which is basically grind down the Senate and not allow Obama basically to do anything and then blame it all on him? That was a large part of their strategy. It was an enormously effective strategy. They had huge wins in 2014. Trump won in 2016. I think that's one way to go. Biden is going to have to make a decision. I don't disagree that he could look at a lot of executive orders. But again, let's say this is not a political vacuum. While there was a large and diverse turnout that won for Biden, that was not the case at a lot of other levels of government. We lost seats in the House. We're probably not going to take the Senate, despite thinking that we had a real shot at it. The state legislative races, which had an enormous amount of money poured into them, did not go Democrats' way. And there were some real concerns over some of the Democratic policies, I think, especially in terms of how left they went. So Biden's dance, McConnell's dance, is how much is he going to push back and block? Biden's dance is he can do a lot of the executive orders. That's a little bit of where the president presidential elected authority has gone over the course of the last 20 years or so. The risk to that is that you antagonize a lot of those voters in the middle, the Midwest, some of those tighter congressional seats, some of those state legislative seats. We saw that really antagonized folks during the Obama years. You had huge wipeouts in 2010 and 14. So if you just make it about executive orders and it's not legislation, there's a risk to that as well.
Matt Rodriguez, Democratic strategist, Jennifer Fernandez-Ancona with us, co-founder and vice president of the progressive organization Way to Win. I'd like to hear from Democrats what you think. To what extent will progressives have input into the administration of Joe Biden, and how much should it have an influence on the Biden administration? 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. Noah in Riverside, you're on Air Talk.
Hi. I think fundamentally this election actually demonstrates that the moderate premise is really flawed. And if you look at the data of which candidates and which policies actually won, it was moderate Democrats who lost across the board with largely uninspiring campaigns that did not embrace the new and exciting policies of the progressive wing. Meanwhile, progressive candidates who supported Medicare for All and a Green New Deal and other such policies won across the country. Furthermore, in Florida, which Democrats lost pretty badly in the House and Senate, you see things like a $15 minimum wage passing with overwhelming support. And finally, polling amongst Republicans demonstrates that many of their voters actually really do believe in policies like Medicare for All, like a Green New Deal, when you have the framing right. For instance, if you frame climate change as a national security issue and members of the military speak to that issue, Republicans are more likely to actually realize that it's an issue that needs to be addressed by the government.
Noah, let me go back to the candidates, because couldn't you argue that the progressives that had success in the election were running in safe districts, and that that was largely the reason that that happened, and that the moderates who lost were running in more purple districts, so they were at higher risk to begin with?
That's certainly an argument that you can make, but I would argue that that kind of effort has been tried and failed over and over again by moderate Democrats, and that they need to offer people something new, something that working people can get behind. And one of the reasons that we have generally low voter participation and low voter registration is that people don't believe that either party has anything to offer them. Working people in America today need a new deal, and progressives are the ones who are going to offer them that.
Noah, appreciate your call. Thanks very much. That's Noah in Riverside. When we come back, we'll get Matt Rodriguez, Democratic strategist, response to Noah's point that he thinks the more progressive candidates were able to have the more compelling campaigns, build greater enthusiasm and turnout. We'll hear what Matt has to say about that, as well as Jennifer Fernandez-Ancona of Way to Win. She co-founded the Progressive Organization and is currently its vice president. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC as we talk about the future of the Democratic Party, as well as progressives, what realistically they expect and will get out of a Biden administration. We'll be back in just 1 minute. Fresh Air with Terry Gross comes up at noon right here on KPECC, and then stay tuned. It's All Things Considered with Austin Cross at 1 o'clock. Austin is going to be bringing you the latest in local news from the KPECC newsroom and, of course, NPR with the very latest on All Things Considered on what's happening nationally during this transition period, such as it is, between the outgoing Trump administration and incoming Joe Biden presidency. We're talking about progressives in the Democratic Party and the degree of influence they can be expected to have in a Biden administration and what that means for the future of the party. Democratic strategist Matt Rodriguez, your response to Noah, our caller's point that it's really the moderate candidates who underperformed for Democrats. The progressives did great in his view.
Yeah, that's kind of the AOC point. It's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And you and I have talked about this on the radio a lot. There's on both sides, whether you're the further right or the further left, this has gone on forever in American politics, really all politics, which is if we just stick to our guns, if we say the things that we believe, everybody will come our way. And I just don't know what data he's looking at. I don't think there's a lot of evidence for that. The evidence is that it's a very close country. The bottom line is Trump actually gained support among even some demographic groups that we would think would be overwhelmingly Democratic in terms of some women's groups as well as African-American. And the bottom line is what a lot of moderates lost because of the more liberal tag that was hung over their necks. You can say moderates lost, but they're losing in districts because the party had moved a little bit further left. I think there were concerns over some of the unrest in cities. Some of the questions about Biden waffled a little bit on fracking. I think that hurt his numbers in Pennsylvania, certainly in Texas among some of those oil workers. So it becomes a self-selecting group to say, well, look at all the liberals who won in Democratic plus 20 districts. They won big and the moderates lost. Well, that's an easy argument to make. I think it belies the numbers, though.
Jennifer Fernandez-Ancona, where you've had in primaries the progressive candidates outperform the moderates when both are Democrats? Are you there? All right, we'll try and get her back. We're talking with Jennifer Fernandez-Ancona of Way to Win, the progressive organization. I'd love to hear from Democrats what you think. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. Lisa in Santa Monica says, I believe progressives need to be folded into the party. Being divisive isn't good. We have a huge chance to flip the Senate in Georgia, to divide the party by using this kind of language is hurtful. Take the labels off and let's govern. Well, whatever you call it, there are certain ideological differences within the Democratic Party, as every political party has. And the question is how those are accommodated in a presidential administration. 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. I think we have Jennifer back. Jennifer, I wanted to ask you about, you know, in primaries, because often we've seen the progressive candidate outperform the moderate in Democratic primaries.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there's actually no evidence that progressive Democrats did worse than moderates in their swing districts. So it is a good thing that progressives can win in primaries. When you actually look at the results, you see that four of the six House Democrats who lost in swing districts were among the most conservative. So it and then when you look at actually of the 11 most conservative in swing districts, only five are expected to win. Of the 11 most progressive candidates in swing districts, at least nine are expected to win, and 11 could win. So I think that there just actually is no evidence. And I would also say that, you know, when it comes to how the Republicans are going to use race as a wedge to divide us, they're going to do that regardless. We know that. They're going to use everything that they can. They're going to use racial fear to try to divide us. It's our job to actually tell a story that speaks to this multiracial majority that I'm talking about. We know that people, we all agree and we want a lot of the same things. And if we speak to people in a way that connects racial justice with economic justice, that delivers an economic message that connects with this multiracial working class majority that just elected Biden, that is actually what's going to help Democrats succeed going forward.
Matt,
that is what the leadership needs to do.
Matt Rodriguez, do you see that growing multiracial coalition among Democrats as being an economically progressive coalition?
Not entirely. Look, I've been doing this business, Larry, for about 25 years now, and I remember working as a young staffer in Congress in the 90s, and I've been hearing kind of a similar argument now for a long time, which is we're just around the corner, right? It's the coalition of the ascendant, young people, minority voters. Once they kind of rise up, we're going to win, and we're going to win big and with huge majorities. And the fact is we've just seen very, very close elections at the national and state levels now going back for 25 or 30 years. That's the period we are in. Everything from Bush v. Gore, you know, Obama won a good-sized race against McCain, but these were not absolute, you know, titanic blowouts. This is not Reagan in, you know, 1984 or Nixon in 72 or some of these larger races we've seen. We are a very divided country. The Democratic Party is becoming an increasingly urban, higher educated, wealthier constituency that also has a lot of people of color within the coalition. And it's a solid coalition, as we saw. Republicans are moving more to a working class type of party, though with some opportunities around second and third generation folks of color if they handle their economic growth argument well. And I just think that's where we're going to be. We're going to be pretty closely divided. I think Trump had a unique appeal to some and drew up turnout. He repelled others. I think the fight's going to be around suburbs and some of those more moderate voters, women and men, who are not really aligned one way or the other on the progressive or the right wing of the parties. And that's really where the fight's going to be.
What do you make of the three Orange County congressional races, Matt, where one of them has flipped back Republican, the other is still too close to call, but the third with a progressive, Katie Porter, the former UC Irvine law professor, she easily won as a progressive in that seat and kept that district. Do you just chalk that up to demographics of that district, or that an example of a strong candidate with a progressive message that connected?
I think it's a little bit of everything you said, frankly. I think Orange County is still tight. It's moving in the Democratic column because of the way California is laid out. But obviously, it struck back a little bit. I do think that 2018 focused a little more on some bread and butter issues, healthcare especially, and some of the economic issues in 2018. I think that's why a lot of those moderate Democrats did well, because remember, that's where a lot of the pickup was in 2018. It wasn't among the far left. I think Katie Porter is a uniquely talented individual. I think she is a rising star. And I think people know that she's incredibly talented. She's very charismatic and she's a hard worker. I think she's a unique person. I think Cisneros and Ruta have less political talent than she did. So I think those are a bit unique in their own way.
Matt Rodriguez, Democratic strategist. Let me go back to Jennifer Fernandez Ancona of Way to Win. Final word from you. What are you hoping concretely you see out of the incoming president?
Yeah, I mean, I really hope that Biden and the leadership in the party will do three things. I think continuing to invest and organize in the base. Look, the country, the map is changing, and all the demographic growth that we're seeing across the Sun Belt is starting to pay off in these historic flips like we saw in Arizona and Georgia. That's just going to continue and will continue on in places like Texas that could change the electoral map for generations. So I think we need to keep leaning into investing and in organizing our base. Like Jen, I said, I think we need to also drive an economic message that connects with working people. Katie Porter is successful because she's talented, but it's also because she's making an argument, a very clear argument that resonates with people. And that's something everyone can do. So you don't have to be uniquely talented to be able to make a coherent and compelling argument that connects race and class together and that talks about what we're going
to do. All right. Of Way to Win, the co-founder, Jennifer Fernandez-Ancona, from all of us at AirTalk. Have a great afternoon.